Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. No, it's not Wednesday. It's Saturday. We're doing the Saturday version of the True North podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Billy North. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, playing a little co-host producer out here in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. This show goes by quick. Catch the archive version. blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports podcast platforms where you subscribe to podcasts powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, let me lay that red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Bill, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? It looks like they're trying to get a hold of you now, and you got a great legend coming through this show.
Things are good.
Okay, I'm here, Mark. I'm here. Yeah. The phone was ringing, you know, this time of day. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What can you do, Mark? Yeah, I'm here.
Well, I'll let Bill have the luxury of introducing you, man. You are a legend.
Yeah. Well,
Bill, yeah.
My people, let me tell you something. In my life and time, you know, you get to meet some good people. You meet a whole bunch of bad ones, too. But this one right here is who I considered my mentor as far as when I came to the big leagues. And he took care of a crazy young man and tried to get his head right. This is a one in a million right here. His name is Billy Williams.
Well, thank you.
Billy Williams from Whistler, Alabama.
Thank you, Bill, for the great introduction. And I remember, you know, a long time ago when you was in Chicago, and we had a great time here, you know, along with Fergie, myself, and you. And at that time, we was on a strike, you know. And
yeah.
We had to keep you in Chicago, so Fergie and I, you know, we rented a place for you, and we got to know you real well. And since that time, we've been making connection and just enjoying life.
Yeah, 50th on the lake.
There you go.
Wow.
Tough to explain my wife. You got a home here. Why do you need an apartment? And we told her that Fergie and I got it for Bill North because we wanted to keep him around here because he was on a strike. And we knew at that time, that wasn't a lot of money being paid to you guys. You're still coming up from the minor league. So we wanted to keep you here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It snowed and everything. Yeah. Look, I got a question.
Question.
You are from Whistler, Alabama, which is about 10 miles from Mobile.
That's right, yeah.
And in that place right there, there's a whole lot of home runs come out of there. I'm telling you, Mark, when you hear this stuff right here,
wow!
Who did you grow up and watch, and who did you play with in those days? Watch these names, Mark.
Well, when I was young, I used to go watch the Mobile Black Bears. And, of course, my brother was on that team. My older brother was a pitcher on the same team with Henry Aaron. So I saw him play, and, of course, Cubs from that area. Cleo Jones, Tommy Agee, and of course, Satchel Paige. But there are so many guys, as he mentioned, there was a lot of home runs, you know, hit from Whistler, Alabama, from Mobile, Alabama. And, of course, Aaron and McCovey, you know, they led the league one year in home runs. And, of course, we have a couple of rookies of the years. Well, three, McCovey, myself, and Tommy Agee from that area. But, you know, there was a lot of baseball being played down there, so we enjoyed the game.
And then Mays was from Birmingham, wasn't he?
Yeah, Mays was from right out of Birmingham, a little place called Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Willie Mays from. Matter of fact, I talked to Willie about, I guess about a month ago. I owe him a call. I got to give him a call. So, I talked to him, try to keep in touch with him because I see him every now and then out in spring training. And he lost his eyesight. He can't see. Every time I walk up and I introduce myself. I'll tell you what's going on now, Billy, if I could mention this.
Yeah.
And when I mention Henry Aaron, okay? And Henry Aaron left Mobile to go play with the Indianapolis Clowns. And when Aaron went to play with the Indianapolis Clowns, he had to go to the outfield to play because a lady on that team was by the name of Thone, which they about to
right.
play here. I'm going down to see it on the fourth. I'm going to see it. They have a play here in Chicago. But it was a blessing that she was on second base, and it was a blessing that Henry Aaron, you know, had to go to the outfield because when he left home, he was a second baseman.
No.
And he went to Indianapolis, and they put him in the outfield, and he played the outfield for a year. And it just so happened Bobby Thompson broke his ankle. And because Aaron was familiar playing the outfield, he was called up to the big league. So that's how, you know, Tony Stone and Henry Aaron, you know, is connected.
Isn't that something?
But yeah. You never know about this game. You never know about this game.
Yeah.
I heard Tony Stone could play, too.
She could. She could. You know, she was competing. She was competing with the guys. And she was a great player. You know, she made the double play. Guys came down there with hot spikes. And she stayed in there, made some great plays. And I used to talk to Buck O'Neill about her, you know. And Buck O'Neill say she was a good player. She competed with the guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey,
and
Billy.
That's another thing.
Oh.
Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead, Mark. Oh, sorry. Hey, you know, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. Six-time All-Star, National League Rookie of the Year in 61. National League batting champion in 72. The Cubs have retired your number 26. You're in the Cubs Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, when you sit back and recollect on all these accomplishments that you've achieved.
Well, mention the statue, that statue, too, they have in Chicago.
Yeah, that statue, too. Yeah.
Ernie Banks, when Ernie Banks said, when I'm gone, I'll still be here, he pointed at the statue. But all those numbers are good. I enjoy the game. I enjoy playing baseball. Go ahead, Mark.
Let me ask you on that. And you know, I just turned 61 in November, this past November.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at baseball, I still look at the 70s as the decade that I really, really enjoyed the game of baseball because it was the crazy uniforms. Billy North was there. You were there. But when you look at the decades of baseball, how far has it changed to where we are today? It just seems like a whole different game with the changes in the sport and everything. What's your perspective on all this?
Well, when you talk about, you know, the late 50s or 60s and the early 70s, everyone talk about and I talk about that was the golden era of baseball. Because as you watch on a Sunday afternoon when they introduced all the Hall of Famers, they were mostly in that era. And I enjoyed playing with those guys, against those guys, and it was a fun time to play baseball. But I see the game now. So many changes has become different in the game. You know, pitchers go out, they pitch nine innings, Fergie did. You know, Bob Gibson did, pitched nine, and they stayed out there, and Drysdale and Koufax and those individuals.
But you see pitchers now,
they go in six innings, you know, because they got the setup guy, they got to use the closer. And like Lee Smith, you know, he didn't want to go in the bullpen. When we were down in Double-A, I had to go convince him that the baseball is changing. Because the pitcher's not going nine innings now. They're going about six innings, and they're going to use setup guy and, you know, the closer. He wind up as a closer and went all the way to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But you see the shift now. I think this year was the last, you know, last year was the last of the shift. And you're going to see two guys have to be on on the right side of second base. Two guys have to be on the left side of second base. Because of this, you might see some great plays in the game of baseball, because, and you might see the averages pick up a little bit, because now, you know, there's too many strikeouts, there's too many walks, too many guys taking the last, you know, pitch, you know. But it'll change a little bit, but you still see some good players in the game of baseball. I think with the changes and everything, I think it's going to be a little better for the game.
I get a question on that, Billy. What do you think about that? Because I got my feelings are that the hitters should have got up out of that shift.
Yeah, they should. They should. I remember I tell some of the guys now, I said, you know, when I played, a lot of guys used to stand by the batting cage, and that was a thing called hit and run.
Right.
We used that to move the ball around. That was a game called pepper that we would do that before we take batting practice. You have a six or seven guys lined up, and you hit the ball to different players. And guys could be spread out 10, 15 feet from each other. And, you know, you start to hit the ball. You learn how to guide the ball. We had one guy with Rizzo. Rizzo was a guy, when he got two strikes, he used the left field line. He was a left-handed hitter. Most of the guys, if they learn to make contact and hit the ball the opposite field, you know, some guys could bunt. I know you, Billy. You know, when you played, you have a lot of hits down to third base by bunting and moving the ball around because of the shift. And, you know, I see guys now, they hit right into the defense. They swing, they get a pitch inside, they hit it right into the defense. If they get a ball outside, if you're a left-handed hitter, if you get the ball outside, they normally take it. But if you get a ball inside, they swing at it and pull the ball, pull it right into the defense. But so many things has happened in this game. I sit and I watch a game with my daughters, and they used to come out to the ballpark and watch games all the time. And they saw some great players playing the game of baseball. And they sit here, and at times they ask me, "Say, what are they doing now, Daddy? What kind of game they playing?" I don't know. Yeah. But it's a funny thing. As I mentioned, you still have some good athletes in the game of baseball, good players.
Yeah.
You know, Billy, real quick.
Yeah, Mark.
How Buck O'Neill was instrumental in your life to continue for you to play the game after he, you know, scouted you. Take us through that, because, you know, we still got this discrimination going on in even today's society with the thing that's going on in Memphis.
Uh-huh.
And my idol was Willie Stargell, and I can remember the days when Dave Parker used to get batteries thrown at him in Pittsburgh and stuff. But take us through it with the listeners with Buck O'Neill, because I think having him by your side to get you to come back into the game was just unbelievable in more ways than one.
Yeah. It really was. Mark, when I first went to spring training, that wasn't the first time I saw Buck O'Neill, because Buck had the area of Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana. And he used to come down there as scouts. And when I went to spring training, Buck always have been a father figure to me. And a lot of people think Buck signed me, but Buck didn't. Guy by the name of Ivy Griffin signed me. Buck wanted to sign me, but I signed without Ivy Griffin because I wanted to play baseball. I wanted to go play baseball. So I did it a little early, a little quick. And, of course, Buck got all over me because I didn't wait on him. But I wanted to go out and play baseball. I wanted to play. And, of course, when I reached AA, and a lot of things happened. When you mentioned Willis Stargell and Dave Parker, a lot of things was, you know, name calling and a whole bunch of stuff that happened. I remember when I was in AA baseball, we riding up and down the bus, and I had to wait on somebody to bring me food on the bus. I couldn't go in the restaurant to eat, and it was just a terrible thing. And, you know, I didn't grow up like that in Mobile. I knew where to go and when to go.
And all of a sudden I say, I don't want to play this game no more. I talked to my brother the night before, and he said, we enjoying the game in Mobile. And I say, I'm not playing this game no more. So when we got back to San Antonio, my roommate was J.C. Hartman. Used to play in the Houston Astros organization. Billy, you probably remember him.
Yeah.
But he was my roommate. And when we got back to the hotel after coming from Corpus Christi or someplace, I got back to the hotel and told J.C., I said, take me to the train station because I'm tired of this stuff. I'm going home. I don't need it, you know. Mm-hmm. And Jay said, I'm not going to take you. Where you going? You going home? I said, yeah, I'm going home. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, I'm not going to take you. I said, well, if you don't, I'm going to grab a cab. And he said, you serious, aren't you? I said, yes, I am. So he took me to the train station. I rode train station. And I was home for about 3 or 4 days. And because, you know, the people and the Cubs were talking about Sano and Williams, and we had a general manager by the name of John Holland. Soon as he found out that I had left the club, and he called Buck O'Neill. He said, Buck, go down there and see what's wrong with Billy, because we're thinking that, you know, eventually he's going to come up with the Cubs. He and Sano are going to have Ernie score some runs up in Chicago. So Buck came down. I sat around for a couple of two or three days, and Buck came down. And I see this car coming up in the driveway. And Buck always drove a Fury Plymouth. And I saw this car. I know it was unusual, but I hadn't seen this car in the area before. And when Buck drove up, I said, oh, I'm in trouble now, you know. And we sit around and talk. He said, Billy, what's wrong, boy? That's what he said. What's wrong, boy? I said, Buck, I'm tired of this game. You know, I don't like what's going on, you know. You can't go in the restaurant. You got to sit around on the bus and wait till somebody brings you food and people, you know, calling your names when you play and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I say, I elected to go home. And, you know, Buck, using his experience, you know, he came home and we sit around for a day or so just talking baseball. And all of a sudden at the end, Buck said, where did you play baseball at when you were here? And we had a place called Pritchett Park. And Buck said, let's go down there and see what's going on, you know. So we rode down to Pritchett Park, and the guys I played on the team with, and some guys that I knew from school, they all came around and said, Billy, we haven't seen you in a while. Where you been? And I told them, I've been off playing professional baseball. And they were all saying, I know that's good, man. I know you really, really enjoyed yourself. And Buck just sitting back, you know, looking and just laughing, man. He said, uh-oh, I got him now. So all of a sudden, he said, we're going to take you back, Billy. I said, we're going to go back. Hold it just a second. Yeah.
He's got the fans asking about him now, Bill.
These guys say, I know you went off to play baseball. You went off to play baseball. I know you like that. Something you always wanted to do. And as I mentioned, Buck was just standing back. And I went home another couple of days, and, you know, I went back to San Antonio. But when I went back to San Antonio, I played 2 or 3 games then. All of a sudden, they brought me up to AAA. I went up to Fort Worth. And I said, all you have to do is go home. They'll bring you up to the big league. So I came back. I went to AAA, and I stayed in AAA for about 5 days, and all of a sudden I'm in the big league. They didn't want me to go home again. That's how that story go. And I give a lot of credit to Buck O'Neill, because Buck and John Holland and a lot of those people in the organization, they saw a lot of talent that's coming, you know, from the minor league. And they sent Buck down there. They didn't have to do that. Buck came down because Buck knew me. Buck I've been knowing Buck for I had known Buck for a long time, and Buck knew that knew my family, knew everybody, and Buck came down and convinced me to go back to play baseball.
I'll tell you what, Billy. He did the same thing to me.
He did? Yeah.
He did the same thing. They used to send him, because you know I could get in trouble every now and then.
I know that. And they
sent him down there, and he said, Billy, what'd you do this time?
Yeah. But Buck knew. Buck, you know, he had a lot. He was instrumental in bringing a lot of guys up to the big league, of course. You know, Ernie came here in 1953. Gene Baker came here with the Cubs in 1953. And Buck knew a lot of players that played in the Negro League, Lou Johnson, George Altman, a lot of those individuals. But Buck knew players. Buck knew players. Buck knew what players thought, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why he was good at scouting. And that's why he was the first black coach in the major league. When he came in 1962,
wow.
He was one of our coaches in the major league.
Buck
had a lot to do with a lot of guys, you know.
He was a true ambassador of baseball.
He really was. He really
yeah.
was.
Let me ask you, Billy.
We're
coming to the end of the show at about 8 minutes and change, we could talk hours with you. But when you look at the pitcher you owned, and boy, you loved facing him, and maybe the pitcher that owned you, take us through the pitcher that you just loved to face every time you faced him, because you jacked that ball out regardless of the fact, and then the pitcher that got the best of you.
Well, the pitcher that got the best of me, you could ask 200 guys. And all of them would say Sandy Koufax, because he was a guy that when he went on the mound, you know, game's over, unless you get a hit here and there. And I tell you, when he pitched that perfect game against us, the only hit in the game was one hit. Lou Johnson got that hit, and he pitched a perfect game against us in 1965, I think it was. But Ron Herbel, you know, he was a guy who used to play with the San Francisco Giants. And there was one guy.
What was the guy from Pittsburgh, Billy?
The guy from Pittsburgh.
The left-hander Latin
Bob
player.
Bob Ville? Yeah.
No, the left-hander, they kept him in the league just to pitch to you. he was a Latin guy and threw from down under.
Oh, I remember that. I can't think of his name now. But
there were a couple of pitchers in the league that stayed in the league just to pitch to you.
Well, there was you always have that one guy. You know, he gives up a lot of hits, but all of a sudden, you know, when you come to the plate, you can't hit him because you just can't pick him up. You know, and he was one of the guys. I know exactly who you're talking about because he was a side-on pitcher, and he threw a lot of breaking balls to him.
Yeah, he was sliding, moving away.
I remember, and they always said this one guy used to keep a knife in his back pocket. He was over in Puerto Rico somewhere, yeah.
He was kind of goofy.
I know exactly who you're talking about, but I can't think of his name now. But Ron Herbert was one of the guys that, you know, I got a few hits off him. And there's one guy that could get you out. You know, you go up to the plate, you know, you can't hit him, you know, because you can't pick him up. He was one of the guys, the left-hander you were talking about over in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But, you know, you find guys like that. I don't care if you're a great hitter in the game or what. You know, you got one guy.
Yeah.
Get you out. I remember we played Pittsburgh one night, and I think Fergie or somebody was pitching one night, and Manny Shane Geen got about four or five hits off us. You know, he was 5 for 5. And all of a sudden, Manny Shane Geen the next night, because he swinged at everything, Manny. You know,
the Panamanian.
He hit the ball all
over.
Yeah. And Leo came the next day and he said, I don't want you to pitch to him. I want you to throw the ball right down the middle of the plate. And they threw the ball right down the middle of the plate, and managed to get him popped up about five. He always thought somebody going to try to pitch to him, but Leo said, throw the ball right down the middle of the plate. And he popped up about four or five times. But managed to get him was funny, yeah.
Well, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, they don't give these guys rattles or anything. These guys are born with bats, man. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I'm not trying to be biased by any means, but those Buck teams back then, they were something too.
When we first came on, Mark, you talk about the uniform the players wore back in, you know, the 1950s and 1960s, and Pittsburgh came out there with those pajamas on, you know. They were talking about pajamas. You remember when they first came out? But were you there the night, Mark? They put nine black guys on the field. Were you there? They're the first team that they used nine black guys on the team. They started nine black. Danny Murchard did that. He started nine black guys in the lineup, and that's the first and last time that will happen. I know it won't happen now because you don't have one or two of the ball clubs.
Yeah.
But Danny,
you know what? The last 3 minutes in the show, Billy, you know, tell us who your offensive team was. I still think it was the 76 Cincinnati Reds. Bill, my brother over there, thinks it was his A's teams. You can break the tie here and throw your own team in, but the best offensive team I thought I ever saw was the 76 Reds.
Well, a big red machine. They were a good team. They had all stars and at every position. Of course, behind the plate was Betch and Tony Perez, who's a RBI. You know, he used to do that every year, knock in some runs. And of course, Joe Morgan was at second base. And they had a good baseball team, and they were a run producing baseball team. But they didn't have any pitching, you know. They had to out hit you. They had to outscore you. But it was a good team. But I came with the Oakland A's in 1975, and I saw the one of the greatest teams in the game. You know, we had some guys that really put the bat on the ball. We had guys that steal bases. We had guys that hit and run. We had guys that make the plays in the outfield. And both of those teams, I stand in the middle of those two teams because I can't say, you know, yay or nay, who was the best offensive team. Yeah.
I'll tell you who I think was the best offensive team and the only team to ever win a world championship by totally hitting. It was the 1979 Pirates.
They was good. That was good, yeah. They call it the lumber company.
The lightning and lumber company.
I remember they used to come to Wrigley Field, and they had a big old sledgehammer that they swing around at home plate.
That was
a good hitting ball club because
they
had Big Bob Bill and Steve Blass. They had some pitchers over there. They pitch good, but they pound you to death. You know, they got a lot of hits. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, did they? Hey, we're out of the show. We got about 40 seconds. You guys would appreciate this. I met a guy yesterday. He's walking around with a 1973 Oakland A's hat on, and he was wearing an Athletics jacket. I couldn't help but tell him about the show today. He's listening now, and boy, it's amazing. He said he loves the A's. He loves you, Bill. And he couldn't wait to hear Billy Williams on here, too. And we're just so blessed. Bill, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, man, as we start to pick up steam next Wednesday on the show.
Yeah, well, Mark, it's great to play with the Oakland A's. When I went with Oakland, that was a great time because we had a lot of familiar faces that were here in Chicago. Jim Todd, Matt Alexander, Kenny Holtzman, and, of course, Billy Knoth. And I just enjoyed playing out there. 1975. And, of course, Reggie, when he was having that problem with Charlie Finley, I remember when Ernie and I, we were all in spring training. And when we would get through with spring training, we'd walk out of the clubhouse, and there was Reggie out there. So we spent a lot of time with Reggie when he was going through a lot of problems with Charlie Finley. We used to go play golf and stuff. So a lot of familiar faces when I went with the Oakland A's. That's why I enjoyed it so much.
What a wonderful show.
Unbelievable.
Thank you, Bill, so much.
All right,
Bill, let everybody know how they can get on you. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah. You're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. It's always good to reminisce about old times. And, of course,
My pal, We'll cherish this. Hey, Norton, wrap it up, my friend.
Okay, you can reach me at BillNorte15@gmail.com. BillNorte15@gmail.com. And I just want to thank Billy Williams, my mentor, and one of the kindest, best people you ever want to meet in your life. Thank you for your time, and thank the fans for listening in. We'll be back on Wednesday next week, maybe with a guy named Herb Washington, who was the first designated runner.
Wow, for the Bills. Bill North, Billy Williams, yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying, cheer on those Cubs and the Bucks. We'll see you on next Wednesday, 5 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock in Chicago, 8 o'clock in New York. Till then, have a blessed and safe weekend, guys, and thanks for tuning in.
You guys have a nice day, okay?